So we are now at chapter number 9, which we are going to discuss techniques for effective interviewing. So this would include certain highlight points like what are the specific techniques that we are going to look at? Are there certain guidelines which can make this process effective? Are there certain stages or phases? And what we would come to know as a 10-step process to effective interviewing. So let's begin with the introduction for this chapter. So in order to conduct an interview effectively, it is imperative to establish what the job involves and the specific skills and attributes needed to perform successfully in the role. The process demands careful attention because when a large number of people have applied for a job, which we have now come to know as recruitment, there is always the possibility of excluding better candidates than those who manage to secure an interview. So we cannot rule out, so you and I both may have these bitter experiences when in the process of selecting candidates, sometimes an undeserving candidate might just get a job vis-a-vis a deserving one. Hence, we have to be very diligent and careful. As we have come to know, the interview process may be a face-to-face, maybe an oral, an observational, and would include personal appraisal methods of evaluating the applicants, which we have seen in the previous chapters. Now, what are certain pre-interview essentials? So we have seen some of these in our previous chapters. Let's specifically generate a discussion around the same. So one is contacting of HR services consultant or the recruiter. So it is critical to set aside time at this point to develop an understanding of the position, settle any questions regarding special requirements, and define selection criteria. It's also important to choose a diverse selection committee. Now, what do we mean by a diverse selection committee? So a diverse selection committee would be the members who would be responsible for running this process, and they may come from different domains from the same organization. Like there may be people from human resources, there may be people from the very process that has created this need or requirement, there may be people who might be proficient at administrating the future tests. And of course, there may be people who might make a future offer or the final offer. So the selection committee will help pick the candidates best suited for the position and for the organization in a holistic manner. Let's look at the responsibilities of such a created selection committee chairman. Now, what is a chairman? He or she would be the main person who would drive the selection committee through their knowledge and experience. So one of the key responsibilities here would be the provision of the selection committee with the selection criteria or criterion. So what is the basis that we are running this recruitment drive for the number of aspirants that would be generated through the pool and then selected subsequently? Also to ensure that the same procedure is followed for each of the candidates. Escort the candidate into the room and introduce the panel. Put the applicant at ease and explain the interview process. Ask the very first question, that is to lead the panel, and ensure that no inappropriate questions are asked. So that is what is extremely, extremely important. We have addressed some of these aspects in our prior chapters with the help of examples, if you were to recollect. A few other responsibilities include the screening of applications and of course making recommendations for interview if directed by the committee chairperson. Help develop interview questions based on selection criteria as appropriate. So developing of meaningful and relevant questions or specific questions is also very important at this particular stage and comes about as a quintessential responsibility of the committee and its chairman. maintain absolute confidentiality of the selection process. So any form of a leakage would lead to undue attention. People would send their incumbents or aspirants, people from their reference, they would be able to educate them, and this would lead to a bias in the process. So it's very important to maintain complete confidentiality of the flow, the structure, the test that would be administered, the questions that would be asked, and so on. Be mindful of legal guidelines pertaining to inappropriate questions. Questions related to their racial background, their religious beliefs, their gender, the marital status. These sort of questions would have or would carry legal implications or consequences. So as to not get into any litigation which would be filed on behalf of candidates, these selection committee members, along with the chairperson, need to understand the implications and the consequences, and thus be mindful of the legalities. Now we move or progress into the topic as a part of the introduction, the guidelines for interviewing. The more structured the interview, the better. Of course, we have delved into a deep dive discussion about the same in the previous chapter. And you might also recollect, or you might want to pause for a moment and just strain your memory for what was said and what is the merit in a structured interview. Following a structure is probably the single technique, okay, which is most likely to help in improving the reliability. Now, we already know the background for this, correct? So, inter-rater, as we have discussed in the previous chapter, the number of raters, they need to have a sort of a universal consensus, right? Which leads to this factor of reliability as well as validity. Now, careful consideration of pre-interview information, application forms or CVs is critical in identifying relevant areas to explore further. So this, of course, has also been discussed. So a lot of commonalities that do come up in these chapters, but it's a good way of reinforcing our learning insights. Now, the interview makes three unique contributions to the overall selection process. First, it is the only way to see an applicant in action. So how do they look? Their mannerisms, their bearing. Bearing is how do they relate to the situation at hand? How do they interact with the interviewers? Second, it is the only way to witness how he or she interacts and how they respond in their way of thinking, the effect on the personality on others. And third, of course, it is perhaps the best way to get at the will-do features of a performance motivation. These include initiatives, the stability, the perseverance, the work habits and judgments. So in a tough situation, will the candidate demonstrate a will-do attitude, a can-do attitude, all right? Or they will crumble under pressure is what will be determined through a structured form of an interview. The so-called can-do aspect can be examined by application, test and reference checks. So this is a predictor of the future based on his past or her past history, which can be determined through the way they've written their application blank or the bio data or the resume, the test that would be administered to them apart from the interview. So there may be ability tests, there may be achievement tests, there may be a PIP inventory run for the same. So under the can-do factors, the following elements are included. These include appearance, the manners that they possess, the courtesy, the etiquette element that they possess, their availability, the education as required by the job, do they have the relevant cognitive capability or intelligence? Like, for example, if a person has to be inducted into ISRO as a scientist, they cannot just be somebody who's a graduate in mathematics, right? they need to possess probably a PhD or a double or a triple degree in mathematics, a sound understanding of physics, sound understanding of mechanics, and so on, right? So somebody with average intelligence can never be envisioned for such a job. Ability to solve problems. So today, people are remunerated or compensated for the ability to do something. For example, having an experience of more than 22 years in the industry, and of course more than 17 years, have seen the recruitment process and learning and development, I would say that Wellinger has entrusted me to solve a problem, that is to make things simpler for this topic and present it in front of you. So ability to solve jobs is a key can-do aspect which is considered, along with what I had mentioned, the relevant experience, the knowledge gained thereupon, the physical conditions and the health. So these all are, they come under the can-do factors. Now let's look at the steps involved in the interviewing process from a different perspective, as was seen in the earlier chapter. So this is a different perspective. So step one is to profile the position functions. Of course, a detailed discussion will follow. Step two is to establish specific requirements. And step three is to establish your priorities. Now let's look at each in detail. So the first includes profiling of the positional functions or the position functions. The key to effective interviewing, if you have to develop it as a technique, is to establish functions. By deciding upon essential functions of the position, you will be able to determine the job's specific requirements. Functions basically are those areas that the aspirant will do justice to when they are inducted in the organization. Now, functions are also categorized under some headings, the first one being essential functions. Now, what are essential functions? They are defined as the basic job duties that an employee must be able to perform satisfactorily. Like, let's say the ISRO scientist. Now, what may be essential function? Performing complex calculations, performing calculations which might put a specific satellite in the orbit, making payload calculations, and several other aspects related to the structural design of maybe an orbiter or a rocket. Okay, so these would be the essential functions of this particular job. Second is establish. So second step is establish specific requirements. So factors to consider in determining if a function is essential include whether the performance of the function is one of the reasons the position exists. So let's suppose in ISRO, this position has primarily opened up because somebody was picked up by NASA and had to leave ISRO for some reason, and the position became vacant and it's a niche position. Or the person has had ill health and has to retire from this position. The number of other employees available to perform the function or among whom the function is can be distributed, okay, but it is not been happening properly. So, there is a vacancy. Consequences of not requiring that an employee perform the function. The degree of expertise or skills required to perform the function. Time spent on performing the function and the actual work experience of a present or past employee in the job. So these are all important factors to consider in determining if the function is essential. So if you cannot do without the basics, you have to have this included in the essential function. So it is essential to determine the specific skills, knowledge, ability, experience needed. Of course, we have discussed this earlier. And we gain a clear understanding of these requirements. And we need to, in order to do this, we need to categorize them according to those items that are behavioral in nature and those that are technical in nature. The last step or the last stage here is establishing of the priorities. So it is critical to categorize your requirements according to must-haves or non-negotiables, which fall under the head of critical, and desirable, those would be want-to-haves or can be acquired on the job and are not necessarily critical as of this moment. So of course, as the name goes, critical, which is quintessential, should be an absolutely must have, correct? Like let's say Bharat Benz, you know, the trucking company wants to, employ a few truck drivers for whom, you know, they would actually do some end-to-end, so far distance, they would take payloads from Mumbai to the hinterland, they would go to Jamshedpur or they would go to Patna or some other places. So long journeys like these, which are about 1,500, 1,800, 2,000 kilometers, and we cannot call upon cab drivers or we cannot call upon people who casually drive for about 100, 200 kilometers. No. So a critical requirement is those drivers possessing an experience of driving a truck for days on an end, okay, and moving through the various roads in the hinterland of India. Desirable requirements, on the other hand, are secondary selection criteria. Okay, so these are attributes which you would like an applicant to possess in addition to the critical requirements. So let's say the truck driver is technologically savvy as well. He knows how to handle the tariff, the RTO places. So he is skilled at handling those. And he, of course, is also skilled with the geography probably. Yeah, so these would be desirable requirements. And he further can train others if need be. So these would be desirable requirements. Now we look at the 10-step interview process, which is a core topic of discussion in this particular chapter. The first, of course, is to create a relaxed interview setting, which was discussed in a very cursory or a basic manner in the last chapter as well. So the setting is nothing but the environment that is created, and as I had mentioned earlier, should be quiet and comfortable, free from any sort of a distraction. From the continuous buzzing of the telephones, constant conversations that do happen at a workplace and so on, correct? So it's important, of course, to ask each candidate to arrive 10 to 15 minutes before the interview so that we can make them comfortable. If it's a one-on-one interview or a panel interview happening in-house at the workplace, they might be offered tea or coffee or water to make them comfortable. In this process, it's also vital to give the aspirant, the candidates, a copy of the position description and any other materials or documents that you feel are important before the interview. In fact, I have also been to organizations who offer them magazines that, echo or put the organization in a better light. So if you go to some power companies like a Suzlon or Tata Power, they have published their own magazines where many of the articles relate to the recent developments done by the organization. So allow at least 15 minutes between interviews also to permit candidates to come and go without an overlap. So you have that buffer. You might want to also reflect and put your own notes. So this process does not become very cumbersome for you and overwhelming as well. So you have a comfortable buffer after each candidate is done and the other candidate arrives. The next, of course, is the following of a logical sequence. So this entails keeping the same format. So this is, I would say a benchmark or a keystone to a structured process, so that there is not much variance in reliability and the validity related to interrogators. It is also important to introduce the candidate to the rest of the committee and invite him or her to be seated. So this is also a key job, as we have known, to be the job of the person leading that panel or committee. Provide information regarding the expected time frame for filling the position as well. So the candidate has an overarching view and they understand, all right, so I will be subjected to these rounds of interview in a specific time frame. Third is, let the candidate do the talking. So this is what was also mentioned in the previous chapter. So a prudent interviewer, a diligent interviewer, is more of an active listener and tends to create a flow where the candidate provides information. So questions that elicit information from the candidate are very important. So it's extremely important to listen and concentrate on what they are saying. So the ideal thumb rule is that the interviewer should do only 15 to 20% of the talking, and the candidate carries the rest of the conversation, as seen here. The 80 to 85% of the chunk of the speaking in the total conversation is done by the candidate. The panel members' inputs should be limited to asking questions, probing. So if there is to a specific question, the answer is not satisfactory or does not give complete details, a further probe might be conducted, and of course keeping the candidates on track. So if the candidate is digressing to some other topic, you need to get them back, because of course time is of essence, right? And of course you don't want to create flaws in your reliability and validity from candidate to candidate. Another key part of the same point which was discussed earlier is the form of questions that are important. So an interviewer has these type or category of questions at their disposal. One important category is the direct questions. These are questions that are easy to understand and are more likely to yield concise answers and specific information from the candidate. Okay, so what made you leave the earlier job? Okay, maybe a very direct question. I have not minced words and I have been very direct in what I have asked. Correct? Open-ended questions often produce unexpected and valuable information, may reveal attitudes and feelings. So the same can be considered also as an open-ended. So what, how, when, okay, these kind of questions may be open-ended questions. So what do you think? You know, do you think attitude is more important or knowledge is more important? So now you might get some very interesting or novel thoughts from the candidates. The third type is the behavioral questions. These require a candidate to analyze a situation and can reveal the extent of his or her experience. So if you notice somebody who has a sort of a halo and you are falling for this candidate, you're susceptible to, you know, take this candidate forward, you might want to look through the halo or cut the halo, create a laser focus by asking behavioral questions. Okay, so you might want to ask them, all right, so if this particular amendment is executed by the government, how would you look at it from the perspective of the organization? Or let us say, if you are provided with an opportunity for a relocation, which entails not a promotion, but it gives you leadership and influence in a better manner, what would you do? So these might be open-ended with a focus on how they react to that situation. And of course, we've mentioned this type before. Nevertheless, we'll quickly cover it, which is the probing type of questions. Examples could be, could you explain what you mean by? Okay, can you provide a further clarification? Can you give us more specific insights? So when they answer a specific question and you need to gather or elicit more information, These are the types of questions to resort to. Fourth point includes being mindful of your questions. So no question is a silly question, but of course the quality of the questions, they tend to determine the quality of the answers. Hence, we need to be mindful. Now these three, so since it's a technique, keep these three rules in mind. Ask questions that focus on past employment performance. Avoid questions that address the candidate's personal lifestyles or habits. So one might have a good number of tattoos on their hand. It's got nothing to do with how they've performed earlier, correct? They might be a brilliant coder or a brilliant tester, and they might be inclined to trekking or going to places in the northern part of India where they got those tattoos. So those tattoos have nothing to do with, you know, the past performance. They may be a star performer. They may be brilliant in their respective field. Ask questions that relate to your listed skill, ability, knowledge, or experience requirements. I've skimmed quickly because we've covered this earlier. And of course, the same point, ask the same questions of all candidates. Now, of course, those were the points that were the do's. Now, these are the points which are the don'ts or points that we need to avoid. So try to avoid close questions that require merely a yes or a no response. They may try to be agreeable to you, and they may create an illusion that yes, they believe in collaboration, whereas the truth may be different. Multiple questions that require several answers. Now these might create a confusion, they might disturb, and it might create a sort of a conflict between the raters. Loaded questions that force a choice between two alternatives. So these might not give you the requisite insight because you are restricting the choices. So what do you think? Is Java a better technology for web development, or is Python better? Now, if the person's, you know, they have something else in mind, they may not be able to cite it because of your loaded question. Questions that are illegal, we have covered this already. Job performance, you know, is not considered thoroughly. Things like status, religion, race, age, gender, medical conditions, which are not truly and directly related to the job performance. These are all open to speculation. Like a person from this specific race may not be able to perform better, truly not real, okay? Or maybe somebody who's not married may not suit this position. It's just a matter of your own speculation or a flaw in the thinking. The next point is a vital point of taking notes. So if you plan to take notes, explain. So this is what I've already mentioned, okay? That you will be taking notes or recording the responses to interview questions. So you will not have to rely on memory, and the candidate knows that you are not multitasking. So whenever, you know, in a virtual environment, whenever you are typing something or you're noting something, they may know that you are fully in the moment of interviewing them. And the only thing that you are doing apart from listening and asking questions is taking notes. And of course, we have already mentioned that human memory is pretty fickle. We cannot rely on it. So you have to ink it to link it. Okay. So you have to ink it to link it means you have to take notes so that your future references can be reliable. Sixth point being close on a proper note. So ask the candidate if he or she is still seriously considering the position. Thank the candidate for coming or being online, of course, and explain your notification process, when a decision will be made, whether a second interview will be conducted, or how the candidate will be notified. So you might want to tell them, all right, you know, after having this interview done, we will send you you know, a detail. If you are selected for the next round, you will be notified by so and so date. end, we would request you to have these documents handy or whatever. Yeah, so this can be a preemptive notification or intimation given to them. Also remember to smile. If you are in person interviewing them, shake hands and lead the candidate to the door. The next important thing is, if you find the interview of that particular candidate to be good, if you have, you know, along with the other raters, thought of putting the candidate to the next phase, it's always important to do a due diligence check or to check the references. So offer additional information on a candidate's skills, performance, knowledge and work history from a source other than the candidate themselves. We've discussed this at length in the previous chapter. Now this helps you assess the candidate's potential for success in the position. So what you essentially do is you check with their colleagues, you might want to check with their ex-bosses, you might want to check with people whom they've worked, you know, you might also want to use LinkedIn as mentioned earlier. So references are checked for three basic reasons: to verify employment, whether they have actually worked in that organization in that specific position. Verify what you have learned during the interview. So when you've heard the candidate making certain claims, correct, like they have led a team of 40 people, you know, in this particular challenging project, have they truly done that, or is this just you're taking their information at the face value? So this is a verification or a validation. Obtain employment recommendations. So if they were to leave the organization, what was the premise? Also, have they done justice to their previous job? So does their previous employer recommend them for your specific job? The next is, of course, after checking references, you might want to make your selection. So each panel member should ask himself or herself, setting aside their particular personal biases, they would need to ask a quintessential question: would I hire this person with reasonable confidence that he or she could handle the job? So what is the level of confidence that you do have in putting this person to the next stage of the hiring process? Would you like to recruit this person in the organization or not? Select a candidate who has the qualifications to perform the duties of the position effectively. The next is, of course, the salary negotiations, or deciding or coming up with the appropriate salary for that specific person. So new hires, so in general, a department can make an offer up to the midpoint of the salary range for new hires. So there are various scenarios that come up when you are proposing a salary. So this is what is for a new hire. Any salary above these levels will be by exception only and require approval of employment services or HR before hiring committee can be made. Of course, for the, you know, people who are seasoned, there can be exceptions, and you can also stretch the CTC provided to them, of course, with the constraint that they are people who would add tremendous value and give you the due return on investment for their hiring. The 10th step and the last step is to complete the recruitment process or packet. Now this includes some good personal practices. So these are the personnel practices, best practices in the industry, you may also say. So follow any internal protocol established earlier. So it's always wise to have a tried and tested procedure, that you have a sort of a benchmark or a yardstick where your process, you know, may not fail. So it's always good to have something tried and tested rather than reinventing the wheel, correct? From this context also, you could touch base or, you know, connect with your employment consultants, your recruiters, to advise of your selection and discuss salary offers. So you might want to gain knowledge from experienced professionals. The next practice or good practice is to call the successful candidates, of course, very obvious. Follow it up with a confirmation of the offer, acceptance, salary, title and starting date, etc. So here the important point is not enter into any sort of assumption. Be as candid and explicit as possible. Few other good practices include all candidates who were interviewed should be notified by phone if possible. So it's not just the successful ones, but as far as possible, you might want to contact them and give them a heads up. A candidate has the right to know the reason or the set of reasons for not being selected. However, the reason should be suggested by selection criteria based on the position description. So it's very important to be discreet, to be objective, and give them the correct information. Hence, a suitable justification for hiring or failure to hire should be given to withstand internal and external audit. So in the future, whenever there's an audit, you might have a proper justification provided to the auditors as to why were certain incumbents or certain aspirants hired and why were certain aspirants filtered as a part of the selection mechanism. Now we will shift to the next important topic, which is the key characteristics of an interviewer. So how to be a good interviewer is what we are going to look at. So making that decision requires not only asking the right questions, but also enabling the candidate to answer them. Now here, if you ask a complex set of questions, you may struggle to get the right information elicited from the candidate. They themselves might struggle to articulate answers to your question. So you might want to ask specific questions which are of a simple nature. So if you want the candidate to eventually take your company's offer, you need to sell the candidate not only on the position, but also on the company in some sense. Yeah. So what good does the company do? What are the chances of organic growth? Are there some other things apart from conducting business that they contribute? Now, when I was listening to one of the podcasts of the famous Stephen Kotler, a person who's written several books. So he has classified that one of the purposes of human existence is to achieve objectives and goals, correct? So it's not just your own objectives, but also what can be given to the society. So over here, the candidate also can be sold with the fact that they would also be involved in some CSR activities, correct? Like the development of some garden, which is sponsored by the organization, some cleanup drives around the city by the organization, some marathons or cyclothons, which are, conducted and part sponsored by the organization, some contests, events, done here. So these will actually attract them to a higher purpose and they might join the organization. Thank you.